The Veterans Affairs Department has hundreds of land use agreements worth tens of millions of dollars. It needs help in managing them. A new study by the Government Accountability Office finds several agreements were recorded multiple times and some revenue had not been reported. For more on how land use agreements work and what the GAO found, we turn to Steve Lord. He's the Managing Director of Forensic Audits and Investigative Services at GAO. Steve, good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Okay. So first of all, tell us, what is a land use agreement and is VA the only agency that's got them?
Well, it's a general term that used to refer to a variety of leasing instruments, such as enhanced use leases, something called a sharing agreement, where VA agrees to allow someone to use their space or facility in exchange for revenue or in-kind service. It also refers to permits, licenses, some of these are shorter-term type agreements. What we did on this job, since EIG recently looked at the enhanced use leases, we really focused on the use of their so-called sharing agreements, which is used, again, to exchange VA space for revenue or services.
So this is almost the opposite of federal land and lease management. This is the government is the landlord in this case.
Yeah, exactly. And the VA is actually a good candidate for these type of agreements because, as you probably know, they have a large, extensive land holding, some of which is underutilized or vacant.
And so this isn't like medical providers that might move into a VA hospital because they do phlebotomy or something. This is just space they have that they're not using at all.
Well, exactly. So if managed properly, that was the point of our report, this can actually help VA leverage their resources and provide additional benefits to veterans. But again, the operative term is if managed properly.
And did this study come out in time for the agreements to make the high-risk list yesterday?
Well, this is part of the larger federal real property high-risk issue. I think VA is a microcosm of what perhaps affects the government at large. The first finding was that VA didn't really have a good handle on the numbers of agreements, and the central database they used to track all this was not really reliable. It was interesting when we first started the job, I asked my staff, well, how many agreements are we talking about and how much revenue is associated with them? You know, it's a real basic question. And VA had great difficulty answering that. And, you know, they gave us various answers. And at the end of the day, we deemed our system unreliable.
Yeah, because it's interesting what you say parallels what Gene Dodaro said to the Senate and House yesterday in relation to other areas of VA. He says they don't have the data to manage this or that program. So this seems like something systemic throughout VA. But in this case, you found it for these buildings. So what is the extent of the holdings that they have that they do rent out?
Well, a rough order of magnitude estimate we were able to drive is about 400 agreements and about $25 million in funding associated with it. Although, you know, when we did a drill down at the three medical centers, West L.A., North Chicago, and New York, we found there were several agreements that weren't even recorded in their system, and we also found that there was other agreements where they waived the revenue provisions, which were actually quite substantial. So, again, we don't really know what the true number is, but it could very well be in excess of the $25 million. We just don't know at this point in time.
So when you say waiving the revenue provisions, does that mean they were letting people use their land for free?
Yeah, for example, West L.A., there's always a lot of interest in what's going on in West L.A. We found one nonprofit. We just looked at fiscal year 2012. That was the latest data we were able to get our hands on. And they waived a revenue provision for a nonprofit, $250,000. There was a laundry facility that was allowed to operate rent-free on their space for several years. There was $500,000 worth in revenues that was miscoded. It did not go to the medical appropriation account as directed. It actually went to the facilities account, so it was used for local salaries and expenses. And the reason VA was given these authorities was to help leverage resources and to provide additional benefits to veterans. So if you're depositing the money in the wrong account, you know, it really could affect your ability to provide additional services to veterans. So that's why we thought it was a significant issue.
So in other words, they have a lot of squatters on their hands, basically.
Um, I, That's not a term we use. We said, well, you may want to monitor these agreements a little more closely because some have expired, haven't been renewed, and the people are still in your space. So, but, you know, this is a oversight issue, a good management issue. And to VA's credit, they're moving out smartly on all six of our recommendations. So over time, the situation should improve. But we were very surprised that it was fairly a loose arrangement. And in the three facilities we visited, of course, we can't generalize to all VA facilities across the nation.
And which piece of VA is responsible for this?
Well, they have this database called the Capital Asset Inventory, and it's managed by their Office of Asset Management and Capital Asset Enterprise Management Engineering Services, alphabet soup of acronyms, I realize. But there's entities within VA that are charged with this oversight and making sure there's an updated list of an agreements in place.
But it's basically a headquarters function, in other words, to take a national view of all this.
Well, it's interesting. For some agreements, headquarters is deemed the primary, but for the sharing agreements, the ones I mentioned that are part of the agreements we looked at, there's a lot of discretion given to the local facility, which is good because they're, on the one hand, they know best how to use their space, but on the other hand, it complicates the oversight of the agreements if every facility has a slightly different arrangement in place. So that's why we thought VA staff needed a little more training to better understand what the requirements are of Congress, and also there could be a technology fix involved too. Their system's a little clunky, and we thought it could have been redesigned to allow for additional fields to be inserted to give them more visibility over some of the agreements.
We're speaking with Steve Lord. He's Managing Director of Forensic Audits and Investigative Service at the Government Accountability Office. I guess my question is, given the general federal trend or mandate that's been in place for any number of years to divest of real property that's unused, why isn't VA just simply getting rid of this property if they're not using it and don't need it?
Well, again, they have vacant underutilized property, and the Congress was very explicit in giving them the authority to enter into these so-called sharing agreements. It was to help give them additional flexibility in addressing that issue. And the hope was if you had additional people coming in from the outside to fill your space, you could obtain additional revenues and direct those revenues to veterans in need. That would be a great arrangement. But it didn't, in some cases, it didn't work out that way, as our report indicated.
And VA has pretty much its own say over real estate and construction separate from the General Services Administration?
Well, there again, federal real property that's been on a high-risk list since 2003, but VA is unique. They do have some special Title 38 authorities to allow them to enter into some of these arrangements, but the provisions are you're allowed to do this as long as there's a health care nexus. You just simply can't go out and lease your space or rent out your facilities if there's no medical benefits accruing as a result of this. And right. That's where I think there was some confusion at the local level. They were just entering into leasing agreements to generate revenue, and that was not the congressional intent.
And while we have you, if you don't mind my asking, since you mentioned that on the high-risk list was something in your purview, which is federal real estate, if you could, just without going into all the details, because you probably don't have them in front of you, but what is the major issue that gets federal real estate management onto the high-risk list?
Well, I actually, that is not my area, but I think I can answer that question. It's basically the same issue. GSA does not have a master listing that's deemed reliable of all the federal government's various real estate holdings. There's a colleague of mine, David Weiss, and her physical infrastructure team that he heads up that issue. And they've consistently raised that issue throughout the years. And that's been on our high-risk list since 2003. So it's been on the list for a while.
So since you have forensic audits and investigative service, probably your work cuts across the entire list at some point.
Yeah, exactly. And the reason we did this job, you're probably wondering why we did this job. Well, there were some allegations that some of the money was misspent. And in fact, the chief accountant out in West L.A. was convicted of embezzlement. And unfortunately, so the situation out there was, fairly serious. But again, if VA implements our recommendations to strengthen the controls and segregate some of the functions out there. That was one of our recommendations. They had all the same functions co-located in one office, and we don't think that's it's important to segregate the billing, collection, and deposit functions to minimize risk of fraud. But they've agreed to do that. So again, there is some good news in all of this. We think over time it'll look better for them.
And just a final question: when the list is assembled, do all of the other directors at GAO that have the different channels that they oversee, do they all come by your office to see if there's anything going on forensically or otherwise?
Well, we have a process in-house where we can see what other engagement teams are starting. If we think there's a forensic audit issue, we become stakeholders on their engagement, and we think that's a good way to manage and make sure we're bringing the needed skill sets to bear. But that's, we do that routinely. So, but we're a small team, of course. I'd always like to have more resources, do even better work, but that's something we can address later.
All right. Steve Lord is the Managing Director of Forensic Audits and Investigative Service at GAO. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me. Bye.